The 2017 Service Improvement and Innovation in Universities Conference.
Professor McMillan, welcome to the Service Improvement and Innovation in Universities Conference.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
You have dedicated many, many years to higher education. Why is transformational change so important to your sector?
It is absolutely critical. Universities are absolute anchors for our economy. They are key collaborators that will, with partners who will drive that economy, and they are at the heart of economic, social prosperity for Australia. As the world changes, so universities have to transform to deliver the new education required for the future workforce. They have to consider how that research is going to fuel innovation and drive impact and produce new jobs and new businesses in regions and cities right across Australia.
What might that university look like in the future?
Well, I think the wonderful thing about universities is that they have at their core absolute commitment to knowledge, to the generation, creation, sharing and unpacking and critiquing knowledge. That will never change. It is an absolute fact, looking across, 800 years and more of universities, that they draw in those who seek to change the world of you, who seek to add value to the world through a deeper, better understanding. I think what we'll see as we move forwards and as we have had a more democratisation of access to knowledge, and that's a terrific thing. And what that does is that opens up universities. It allows universities to consider they don't have to do all the heavy lifting of education or of adding value in that postgraduate space. They can begin to offer shorter courses for those who wish to come in and understand. It might be about automation or robotics because they're working in business and they know this is going to be part of the change in the future. They may not want a master's, but they want somebody who's close to the cutting edge, who's a deep thinker. And they might want some form of credential, and they want to achieve it in a flexible, efficient and effective timeline. So we'll see some of the changes in the role of universities and credentials. We're not going to lose the quality assurance of the defining programs, and that's my view. But what we'll change is the way we deliver them, how we deliver them, how accessible they are, how flexible they can be, maybe a face-to-face experience, but others might seek an online experience or a flipped classroom experience. Flexibility is going to be really important.
So technology is a friend to the university sector?
Absolutely. I think nobody in the university's workforce, academics and professional staff, in their own lives will do anything but work with technology. And why would universities be different? So I do think the way in which technology allows us to reach out. There was a lot of discussion about MOOCs. They had no business model. But my goodness, they have offered great experiences through the wonderful voices of superb academics to people across the world who could never have accessed that. And that's technology. So anything in my book that allows that wonderful access to people who simply may not have the opportunity or who wish to seize the opportunity to add value to their career or their lives, well, that's wonderful.
What do you see as some of the barriers preventing transformational change?
Oh, look, I think human beings.
It's all our fault.
Well, we are complex critters, and we know in our own lives. We get familiar with how the latest Windows program is working or how that iPhone app worked for us. And then it's changed and we complain because we had learnt. We felt we had mastered something. And then there's something new. And of course, we move on and we master that. So we are interesting evolutionarily, I think, in how we consider change, how we respond to it. Somebody said to me the other day in the university, look, to be brave, you have to have stability. My sense is actually to often being brave is in the face of a challenge. It's the face of an imminent change. And that's actually what prompts some of the new ideas, some of the ways to grapple with some of the big issues that face us in health, or that face us in society, that face us in issues around having an inclusive, diverse society. It's always about how we bring our best selves into change. So I think understanding change is complex. Understanding we appreciate mastery, and particularly in academia, sometimes, and I'm somebody who's taught for a large part of my career, you feel confident with one mode and a delivery of some material, you know you can walk in and you know you can explain well. But when faced with technology to use, your gold standard is something that may not be a gold standard. And so finding to one's surprise that this does it better, it adds value, it's a bit of a journey. So I think that being able to grapple with the sense that one can have value added, and that sometimes taking a risk and experimenting can bring benefit to those students and to yourself, it's a big jump. So I think in human society, we tend to really be wary of some of those major changes. We critique, we unpack, and no more so than in universities. Having said that, I think when universities move, when they've informed themselves, when they think very hard about what they must not lose and what they seek to gain, they usually do change really well. So it's a journey.
It is a journey. And speaking of journeys, in your travels and through your observations, where are you seeing evidence of transformational change having a positive effect?
Look, I think where I particularly would say I see it in two areas. I think across Australia, the demand-driven system, it's a unique system, because across the world there is this usual reflection on universities. They're either select and excellent, and those two words go together. We often see great universities who pride themselves on the highest score possible that students need to achieve at secondary education to get into those. And then we see what people have called, in a rather disparaging way, the massification of education. In other words, you can't possibly give that same standard of education to all comers. Well, I think in Australia we've shown that actually equity and excellence is not only possible, it's necessary. We face a future, if we want a one-speed economy, we absolutely need to have access to a higher education for bright, talented, able students, no matter their background. We're good enough in the university system to make sure that we support those students who will be able to take benefit of those programs, to have the benefit of those and the outcome for them and their families. And we also should never trade equity for excellence or excellence for equity, because a great degree infused with excellence is the best degree. So one of the big changes I've seen with the demand-driven system, with all of the narrative and all of the contested space, is that we've done an experiment and shown it is possible. And I'd love to see that ripple around the world. In other places, I think particularly in the UK, I think they are further ahead in the context of how they view regions, universities in regions, and innovation ecosystems with universities as anchors in regions. And I think this is something Australia will learn from. Australia's been positioned very well to meet the imperative of the national innovation and STEM agenda. But I do think that we have had a city-centric view of how that might occur. And I think by learning from others, particularly, as I say, in the UK and in Canada and in many respects the US, what we'll actually be able to do is change that narrative somewhat, because I think to have a one-speed economy, which is an inclusive economy for all Australians, we're actually going to see those regional areas boom. They're where the challenges are, they're where great universities are to respond. And I think that, together with the equity and excellence agenda, I think we'll fast forward as a nation.
And as we undergo this period of change, are there times when it's okay to have a silo? I can hear a couple of staff saying, yes, yes, don't change.
I think we should all be allowed one silo one day a week. You know? Right. Yes, this is my safe space. I can talk to people who understand my passion for whatever part of my discipline is. And look, it is interesting. I do think that I think a body of work and a body of knowledge and how disciplines function, you know, require conversations that often your silo is halfway across the world. These are people who, when you sit in the bar after the conference, you talk the in-depth detail of great work that you just can't have in any other place. And that infuses new ideas, it refreshes the way you consider. So I think the global silos of knowledge and the forefront of what you learn where people are thinking, not in their publications last year, but what's going to come out in 2 years' time. I think what we bring back when we bring back that information, you know, knowledge without boundaries. And when countries are putting up many boundaries at the moment, knowledge should have no borders. When we bring that back, sometimes what I think is interdisciplinary work is of value when the disciplinary components are excellent. And that added value of what you've got from that, those people who understand that the discipline is supreme but are tussling it out just brings into that interdisciplinary mix something of real value. So I think it's a mix and match, sometimes going deep and then sharing it so that that in-depth understanding, and in interdisciplinary work it's knowing because experts know what they don't know, they know what is not known, and that's through tussling it out with others.
You are also committed to building collaborative relationships between university and government, industry. What have been some of the steps to achieve such strong outcomes, particularly for universities where at times it can be slightly different, I guess?
Look, listening, I think, is a real skill. What often we do is we bring our capability to the table rather than listening to what capability is required. Or we put forward our ability to solve problems that aren't actually the major issues for a government or indeed for a company. And so it's understanding what are the key priorities, what are the preoccupations. And it's reflecting genuinely on whether there is a capability available to really add value into that mix. So deciding what you have that you can work with and what you can't solve is important. I think trust between partners. When you're working with your university partners, as universities we have to compete with our collaborators and collaborate with our competitors. So we have to build trust that we're in a collaborative relationship and understand where we're going to compete. And trust is at the heart of all collaborations. And if you maintain that trust with your partners, you're bringing a great asset into a collaboration. Understanding when you're a leader and a team member, when you step forward and when you step back. So you don't have to drive everything. It doesn't have to be all about you or your university. You're part of a team and there's someone else who is really equipped to see where the project or the collaboration should go.
We know that the nature of universities is often characterised by competition. So what advice do you have for those who have to face that competition every day, but at the same time understand the importance of working together?
Well, I think that comes to how is it that as competitors we learn to collaborate and how we learn to collaborate, with our competitors. So essentially, from my perspective, competition is an interesting human trait, but it's often fueled by, in academia, a desire to know. It is really, most of our academics are working at such an intense level, a world level, where they're waking up in the morning tussling out an issue which is within a field going to change global practice. And it is always going to be competitive because there will be somebody waking up on the same morning having those same thoughts. And in a sense, we might consider that that's wasted competition. Why not join together? But sometimes we may not even know each other in the actual sphere of the field in which we're working. So I think competition can hone some thoughts with rigor. It can add some value, and it equally can be distracting. So you've got to have about the right level of competition. Sometimes in the distraction, it can create dysfunctional relationships, you know, dynasties and legacies of feuds that were never settled. So I think it's important to have a bounded, competition, and then reasonably to ensure that where you're quite clear, and I think the interdisciplinary space is a very healthy space, because if you're trying to work out, you know, as one of our researchers is, how to develop an artificial pancreas using the latest in control systems from electrical engineering and the latest in understanding of insulin secretion and the action of signaling within the cell, you have to respect each other's expertise. You have to bring your best game each, and you bring that together. So I think that's where sometimes highly honed competition is just left at the door, and highly honed collaboration delivers the best.
Final question. For those who are attending the conference and listening to this podcast, what's the take-home message from your presentation?
I think the take-home message is universities are critical to the future of Australia. How we address the challenges in this next era, which will be driven by innovation across all domains of creative, cultural, scientific and technological endeavour, will have everything to do with the nation's prosperity across our cities and across our regions.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.